Good morning and welcome into the Tuesday edition of The Daily Perspective. It's a Tuesday after a three-day weekend for a lot of people, including myself. Hopefully you got a three-day weekend as well and had some time to sit back and enjoy friends and family and to remember what yesterday was all about. And just as a reminder, it wasn't about the barbecue. It was Memorial Day, a day that this nation sets aside to remember those who have given the ultimate sacrifice for this country. And I hope you remembered that, at least for a moment yesterday, as you enjoyed your day off, if you had a day off. A lot of people didn't. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I'm glad you're there. Thanks a lot for being there each weekday morning. And for understanding that this little Pokey podcast took a day off yesterday. It was a good time. I spent some time with my mom, who's in her mid-80s, and about once a week we get together, we go have some lunch and run some errands and, you know, just taking care of mom. And it was good to spend some time with her yesterday, even though both of us completely and totally forgot one of our errands involved a bank. And as we turned in to go to the bank, we saw the empty parking lot and remembered, oh yeah, it's a bank holiday. So yesterday, both of us were a little bit memory challenged. I wonder if you remember back in 1992, what happened when a certain Disney cartoon movie, animated movie, was released, and a certain segment of the population was all up in arms because of the way it portrayed certain people. Yep, that happened back in 1992 when Disney released the movie Aladdin. This was a long time ago. Now, there was a song at the beginning of the movie that was called Arabian Nights. And the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, the ADC, we'll just call them that from now on, was upset because the lyrics of the song, one of the lyrics said, where they cut off your ear if they don't like your face. That was the original release. They changed that lyric and substituted where it's flat and immense and the heat is intense, which in itself is pretty funny, but still. That change first appeared in the video release in 1993. The original lyric was intact on the initial CD soundtrack release. The re-release used the edited lyric. The Broadway adaptation also uses that same line about intense heat. The re-recording has the original voice on all the other lines, and then a noticeably deeper voice says that edited line. The subsequent line, however, which says it's barbaric, but hey, it's home. They left that alone. Entertainment Weekly ranked Aladdin in a list of the most controversial films in history just because of one line in the opening song. The number was described in reviews as simultaneously glamorizing and barbarizing the Arab world. The ADC, remember those guys? Yeah. The ADC also complained about the portrayal of the lead characters, Aladdin and Jasmine. They said the characters' anglicized features and Anglo-American accents in contrast with other characters in the film, which had foreign accents, grotesque facial features, and they appeared villainous or greedy. Well, there was a reason for that. They were greedy and they were villains. Hello? Hello? The obvious just escapes these people. I remember when this happened and I thought, they did what? They changed a line? It's a movie. It's a fantasy. It's a story that's a fantasy. It wasn't real. The characters had purpose. The reason they looked and sounded a certain way was because they were thieves. They were greedy. They were villains. They were bad guys and they were good guys. And it was made in an American studio. And the main actors didn't look completely American, even though they were American actors. What would you have? People with accents? That would just be something else they would complain about. Well, if you remember that, you won't be shocked to find out that CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, was just a little bit miffed when the new release of Aladdin came out. This new release, by the way, over the weekend, did 112,700,000 in domestic U.S. dollars in ticket sales. It took in 48.2% of all of the money spent at the movie theaters over the weekend, a three-day holiday weekend. It did 121 million worldwide, or plus foreign, I should say. Outside the U.S., it did 51.8% of the box office. Worldwide, the new Aladdin, featuring Will Smith and a couple of newbies, took in $233,700,000. Will Smith, Naomi Scott, Mina Massoud, music composed by Alan Menken, directed by Guy Ritchie. It did pretty well. It did pretty doggone well. But CARE says that releasing the Aladdin film during the presidency of Donald Trump will worsen racism and Islamophobia. And they want critics to say so. God love them. They say the story Aladdin is based on is racist and bigoted. It's evil. And you have to pronounce it that way with that long E. It's evil. The statement from CARE reads, "The Aladdin myth is rooted by racism, Orientalism, and Islamophobia. To release it during the Trump era of rapidly rising anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, and racist animus only serves to normalize stereotyping and to marginalize minority communities." The live-action movie, of course, is based on Disney's hit animated movie released in 92 with the late Robin Williams voicing the iconic Genie character. I don't know if you were aware, but he did that for scale. He normally charged $8 million bucks, but he agreed to do it for scale. That got him a little over 70 grand. And he had conditions. He had conditions, which Disney just said, forget that. Because he didn't want to be featured in, you know, like in the posters. He didn't want his image to be more than 25% of a poster advertising the movie. When Disney realized that his character, all the ad-libbing, the funny, how funny he was and what he was the movie. They said, well, we can't honor this. And they moved forward. And he had reasons. He had the movie Toys coming out, and he had some other stuff happening. And he didn't want to take away from his works that he didn't see this as featuring him. But that's not how it turned out. Well, CARE says the original story and any movies based on it carry problematic and bigoted depictions of Middle Eastern culture. Quote, "The overall setting, tone, and character development in the Aladdin story continues to promote stereotypes, resulting in a perpetuation of Islamophobic ideas and images. We urge the public and film critics to scrutinize the new production of Aladdin in light of its historical context and today's toxic environment for all minority communities." Blah, 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 blah. You know what? They keep talking about Islamophobia and bigotry and racism. And actually, there are studies that are coming out now that say the actual opposite is true during the Trump administration, that these problems are actually going away. And do you know why? This is true because people are now becoming more focused on being successful. They're more focused on their opportunities and the possibilities for their lives, and they're pursuing happiness. Oh, imagine that. What's happening in America is what the founders envisioned. People pursuing happiness instead of wallowing in pity and being perpetually offended by everything that happens and every breath taken by certain people. People are consumed and preoccupied with pursuing happiness. And so the people at CARE, by the way, again, are lying to you. It's a lie. People are not upset. people don't see this as being Orientalist or Islamophobic. It's a comedy. It's an adventure. It's a fantasy. It's not real. It's escapism. And they're just enjoying the escapism and the story of the movie because it's an impossible thing. And people love to fantasize about the impossible. And they'll drop some money to do it. They'll spend money on tickets. They'll spend money on popcorn and sodas. And they'll go and sit in the dark and thrill to the excitement of something that couldn't possibly be real. And yet people like the people that care have got to demonize it because that's how they keep going forward. Without being offended by everything, they have no purpose in life. None. And so you and I should not give them purpose. We should ignore them. And beyond that, we should laugh at them because they're lying to us. They're expecting us to believe something completely absurd. And our choice should be not to. So, nice try, Care, but idiots. I'd prefer to think about, oh, I don't know, UFOs. See how I changed the subject there? Yep. The Navy has been reporting UFOs, suspected aircrafts encountered during flights that they can't recognize or explain. You know, we tend to think of aliens, but maybe so, maybe not. The New York Times, you can't always trust those guys either, they've collected some of the stories from the Navy, including that of Lieutenant Ryan Graves. He's an FA-18 Super Hornet pilot. Graves has been with the Navy for 10 years. In 2014 and 15, Graves saw something he couldn't explain. The Times described the objects seen by Graves and other pilots as having no visible engine or infrared exhaust plumes, able to reach 30,000 feet and hypersonic speeds, and at least one of which spun like a top, moving against the wind. Graves said these objects, which appeared between summer 2014 and March 2015, would be out there all day. Quote, keeping an aircraft in the air requires a significant amount of energy. With the speeds we observed, 12 hours in the air is 11 hours longer than we'd expect. Graves and other pilots told the Times they began noticing strange objects after their decades-old radar system was upgraded. The pilots initially thought they were false radar tracks. Yeah, I can see that. They've got a new radar system, and they thought, we've got bugs, but apparently not. He told the Times, people have seen strange stuff in military aircraft for decades. We're doing this very complex mission to go from 30,000 feet diving down. It'd be a pretty big deal to have something up there. Another pilot, Lieutenant Danny Aucoin, maneuvered below one of the objects. He told the Times he was close enough, he should have been able to see it, but couldn't. A few days later, the object reemerged, this time a training missile locked on to the object. He said his infrared camera locked on, too. He said, I knew I had it. I knew it was not a false hit. I could not pick it up visually. In other words, their radar is picking up this stuff, but visually they're not seeing it. Finally, a pilot did see one of the objects. Graves says this pilot came back from a mission with a look of shock on his face. The pilot told him, I almost hit one of those things. And he described it as a sphere encasing a cube. Footage from these flights showed objects moving in ways no human could survive, such as acceleration to hypersonic speed and then suddenly stopping. The pilots made no statement as to whether they believed the objects were alien. This month has seen several stories about the way the Navy handles such sightings. At the beginning of the month, the Daily Wire reported the Navy was encouraging pilots to report their encounters with the unidentified craft. A few days later, the military branch suggested it would renege on a promise to reveal reported encounters. Just last week, the Pentagon confirmed it was still tracking reports of UFOs. The New York Post reported in a statement provided exclusively to the Post A Department of Defense spokesman said a secret government initiative called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program did pursue research and investigation into unidentified aerial phenomena. So, pilots are seeing things and they're talking. They're being allowed to talk. And we're hearing odd stories of things that their radar is locking onto, and finally they're seeing in the air. What does this mean? I don't know. Is it possible that maybe Nancy Pelosi came from one of these things? I think it's entirely possible. Things that make you go,
I got things to do here.
Well, so do I, so. Good morning and welcome back into the Daily Perspective. Oh my gosh. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you took a load off, took it easy, enjoyed life. It's like I said last week, you gotta live. Can't be consumed with all this stuff, which is why those first two stories were there. Because life in this country is getting weirder by the day. Things that you think are just common sense that nobody should question. Suddenly there's an entire generation of people who will hold up a hand and say, yeah, but, and then they present some kind of bizarre theory about things. And the next thing you know, everybody's talking about it and they're all upset about it. It used to be that we spent too much time staying busy and doing things and improving our lives and pursuing happiness. And now we sit with our faces glued to mobile devices, reading stories and communicating with people about things that we really don't understand. And it's to the point that I sit in traffic every day and I find myself yelling at cars in front of me. Get off your stupid phone and drive your car. Because so many people just sit staring at their mobile devices. They're texting, they're reading articles, they're on Twitter, they're doing things. And they're at traffic lights, and people behind them are blowing their horns. Hey, stupid, move. It's because they're oblivious to the world around them. They're consumed. And it used to be we were actually involved in life. And now we're involved in a pseudo-life. It's really strange, very, very strange. And people are getting information from all kinds of weird places that they shouldn't. I posted on social media this morning an article about BuzzFeed, the website BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed.com. And if you didn't see it, I encourage you to go look at the Mark and Mac Show and Daily Perspective Facebook pages. And I believe it also popped over to Twitter, if everything is set up right. If you're following those accounts on Twitter, you'll probably see them there as well. But the article is about the founder, the guy behind BuzzFeed, and his character. And it teaches us a lesson that it's not trustworthy because this guy is not trustworthy. He's a scam artist. He's a con artist. He has a purpose, he has a mission, and he will say anything and do anything, including lying, misrepresenting, and committing fraud in order to accomplish his goals. So you can't trust BuzzFeed. And that's not even a very long stone's throw from the mainstream press. Because we're seeing today that they will ignore obvious truth for the sake of their agenda. And today's agenda, almost all of it seems to be do anything and say anything to stop President Trump from accomplishing his goals. And we know that he's been trying since he was elected to solve the border situation. We wondered for a while, is he ever going to do anything? Is he going to build the wall? Because that was the campaign cry, build the wall. And for a long time, we've wondered, what's happening? Well, we've been learning that it is happening. It's just not getting reported because the leftist press doesn't want him to succeed. The leftists in politics don't want him to succeed. But there is progress being made. We're just not hearing about it. And he's having to fight in some bizarre ways to make it happen. And he's getting funding from places, from non-traditional accepted sources, and he's been successful in doing so until a leftist judge will step in and put a stop to what's going on. Well, this has happened again. A judge issued an injunction to stop President Donald Trump's border wall Friday. And it looked like progress was going forward, and then all of a sudden, bang, the gavel drops, and no, it's not. But it turns out this judge, Haywood Gilliam, has a secret. And that secret reveals how biased he actually is. Haywood Gilliam issued the preliminary injunction that stopped the transfer of funds from other departments to the defense projects. The decision will likely be appealed in a battle that could go to the Supreme Court. But it's what the judge, who was appointed by former President Obama, what the judge didn't say that shows his bias. This is according to the Daily Caller. Federal election records show the Obama-appointed judge gave $6,900 to Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. It was made up of two $2,300 contributions to Obama for America and a $2,300 contribution to the Obama Victory Fund. 4 years later, Gilliam donated $5,000 to Obama for America and $8,500 to the Obama Victory Fund for a total of $13,500. He also added a $4,500 donation to the Democratic National Committee, in addition to $3,100 to the Covington and Burlington LLP PAC, the PAC, from 2012 to 2014. The Epoch Times, they first reported Gilliam's political contribution history, noted the donations began in 2007, a year after Gilliam's stint as assistant U.S. attorney in the Northern District of California, and ended after he began his U.S. district judgeship. During his confirmation, Gilliam said he would base my decisions solely on the facts of each case and the applicable precedent, without regard to any political ideology or motivation, and that his personal views, quote, would not interfere in any way with my ability to neutrally apply the law. An injunction was issued on Friday to block the transfer of around $1 billion from other Defense Department programs to fund part of the border wall. California U.S. District Judge Haywood Gilliam, according to The Hill, who was appointed by former President Obama, issued the order which does not fully halt construction but would limit additional border fencing to specific areas. It would also block the transfer of about $1 billion in Pentagon funds from various projects to pay for the construction of a wall. Trump made an emergency declaration earlier this year to circumvent Congress and reallocate funding from the Defense Department to begin work on the wall. The judge halted the Trump administration from taking any action to construct a border barrier using the reallocated Defense Department funds in parts of Arizona and Texas, identified as Yuma Sector Project 1 and El Paso Project Sector 1. So, the essence of the story is this judge was appointed by Obama. He was an Obama supporter and heavy donor to his two presidential campaigns. And his political bias is what's dictating his judgment. Even though he said it would not, his political bias is what is guiding his judgment. Someone else whose political bias has guided their judgment was the governor of New Mexico, a Democrat, Michelle Lujan Grisham. She's heavily criticized President Donald Trump's immigration agenda and the administration's overall response to the border crisis. And in February, she condemned what she called Trump's charade of border fear-mongering and announced she was withdrawing most of the New Mexico National Guard troops deployed to the U.S.-Mexico border in her state. She said, "I reject the federal contention that there exists an overwhelming national security crisis at the southern border." Her comments came just more than a week before Trump declared a national emergency in response to the overwhelming migrant crisis at the border. But now, more than 3 months after her public campaign of opposition against the Trump administration, Governor Grisham is seeking federal government assistance to manage the impacts of the border crisis on New Mexico. Less than 90 days later, according to KOAT-TV, Lujan Grisham met with federal officials in Washington, D.C. last week, including Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan, to discuss the ongoing crisis. Grisham asked McAleenan to increase government personnel at the border and requested reimbursement for humanitarian assistance, among other resources. The governor's spokesman, Trip Stelnicki, told the station, "The governor wants to continue to urge the federal government to increase its personnel on the border as a means of improving the logistical and communications output. Odd. Considering Lujan Grisham's public outcry against the Trump administration, Republicans, of course, had a field day with a trip to D.C. New Mexico GOP Chairman Steve Pierce said she declares there's no crisis. She removes the National Guard, and now she's there asking for money. Everything in her actions indicates that she believes there's a crisis, but yet she will not dedicate the resources or request to her colleagues in Congress to start passing the laws that will change the situation there. The border communities are going to continue to be overrun. As I've said before, they can call everyone. It's still a crisis. It's really going on. And there are those who recognize it and have decided to stop fooling around, and they're taking matters into their own hands. For example, there's a group called We Build the Wall. They say they've finished construction on a segment of border wall in New Mexico, closing a gap in the existing border wall themselves rather than waiting for Congress and the president to come to an agreement over how to fund the massive construction project along the U.S. southern border. They have completed a half-mile section, and they unveiled it over the weekend. We'll take a look at that coming up after the break as Daily Perspective continues. The crisis is real. The leftists in the House, the leftists in Congress, don't want a solution because it would give our president a victory and prove him correct. He's been right about pretty much everything except his, you know, little things that he tosses off from time to time. When it comes down to serious matters, he's been correct. And they've been wrong.
Never heard anything like it before.
Mind if I give a listen?
Sure.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh. It's good to get back in the groove again after having a three-day weekend. Yesterday was, it was odd. I'm so used to being in the studio doing stuff, and not being here yesterday was strange. It was just strange. I felt kind of useless. And I have other things to do. It's just that without this being part of the day, it was just weird. Anyway, back in the saddle again, and that's good. Good stuff. Moving on, back to this group called We Build the Wall. They say they've finished the construction on a segment of the border wall in New Mexico. They've closed the gap in the existing border wall themselves. Instead of waiting for Congress and the president to come to an agreement over how to fund the massive construction project along the state's southern border. And the thing is that they're not going to agree. As long as there are Democrats involved and Democrats controlling the House, then they're not going to come to an agreement. It's just not going to happen. Because the Democrats will not give Donald Trump one iota of success. They won't do it. Even though he is succeeding at every turn. And where he succeeds, they lie. They will not tell the truth about what's happening in America. They credit Barack Obama with this success. Yeah, this is all the result of his policies. Which is, yeah, that's why the unemployment numbers were as bad as they were, and they're good now. And that's why the economy has turned around. And that's why, how come none of this happened under his watch? And this happens, if you look at your history, this happens every time a Republican succeeds and becomes president. The Democrats take credit for everything that he accomplishes. Everything fails during the Democrat administration and then succeeds during a Republican administration. And the Democrats say, well, we had to fix all the problems they created and we suffered through hard times. And now he's enjoying the things that we fixed, which is a bald-faced lie. Well, the Washington Times reports that We Build the Wall unveiled their half-mile section over the weekend. The 18-foot steel bollard wall is similar to the designs used by the Border Patrol, sealing off a part of the border that had been a striking gap in existing fencing. The gap runs from the Texas border, where it ends at the Rio Grande, up through southern New Mexico along the lower elevations or Mount Cristo Rey. We Build the Wall claims the half-mile section of steel wall is the first privately constructed part of the border wall, and that their project moved faster and, at $8 million, required less funding than a similar project headed up by the federal government. Of course, because the federal government, no matter how much we need something, always ends up costing us much more and delivers an inferior product. The group, led by former Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kilbach, also says they've got the blessing of President Donald Trump and the United States Border Customs and Protection, who were grateful for the help. He told reporters, "We're closing a gap that's been a big headache for them." The half-mile segment of border wall, the group says, closes a gap frequently used to smuggle both people and drugs. Kilbach added that on a typical night, around 100 migrants and $100,000 worth of illegal narcotics passed through that half-mile hole. The Trump administration was working on a plan to construct around 234 miles of steel fencing, effectively sealing off the southern border with a border wall, but attempts to secure the funding for the project have stalled. Congress refused to agree to any funding for the border wall beyond the $1.6 billion promised in the 2018 budget, and President Donald Trump's national emergency declaration, which would have detoured funding to the border wall from other Army Corps of Engineering projects, was halted by a judge pending ongoing litigation. Funding for the border wall has also taken a backseat to a more urgent need, funding for border processing. More than 100,000 migrants are presenting themselves at the United States southern border per month now, and forced by law to process anyone who requests asylum. The CBP and Immigration and Customs Enforcement are now overwhelmed with detained immigrants. And as I've said before, this is by design. Overwhelming a government function is how this works. You overwhelm it, you break it, you crush it, you demand that it be rebuilt with leftist policies instead of rational, reasonable, real-world policies. Although the Trump administration officially ended the catch-and-release policies of the Obama administration, the federal government has reportedly, according to Politico, been shipping migrants who declare asylum to cities in Texas and California far from the southern border in order to relieve the stress on Border Patrol facilities. Quote, the Trump administration is flying migrants to San Diego and Del Rio, Texas, and busing them to El Centro, California and Laredo, Texas, according to a U.S. Customs and Border Protection official familiar with the plan. This is according to Politico. They are being processed, which includes photographs, health screenings, fingerprints, and background checks, before they are often released and told to return for a court hearing at a later date. Now, we know that only a very small percentage of those people actually do that. Regardless of what Beto O'Rourke claimed in a statement in a speech the other day, 99%. He actually said in an interview the other day that 99% of these people show back up again. We know that we've seen statistics that show that as few as 20% show back up. As few as 20%. He basically lied to everybody. But then again, he's a leftist politician, so. The administration's also reportedly considering sending migrants to less populated areas in Florida and in the American Southwest in the hopes that by personally relocating them, they're better able to track asylum seekers while they await their day in court. And why would they do that unless there's a problem, you see? Being better able to track asylum seekers means they recognize that they're having a lot of trouble tracking them now. We're being lied to day and night about our situation on the southern border. And I don't have to tell you that. You know that. The leftist press is not going to give the Trump administration any margin of success. And they're not going to tell you the truth when he is successful. And they're not going to tell you the truth when it suits their agenda not to. Which is why you don't hear about the bigger problems at the southern border. There are big problems there. And they're getting bigger. But leftists, politicians, and press alike are denying the issue at the border. They're saying, it's not a crisis. It's not an emergency. Well, yes, it is. And it's interesting to me that on one hand, they'll say, no, there's no crisis down there. But on the other hand, they'll say, there's a humanitarian crisis on the border, and it's this administration's fault because they're putting children in cages. So which is it? Do we have a crisis on the border, or do we not? I think we do. Well, now there's a memo that's been issued by President Donald Trump. This happened on Thursday. It makes the sponsors of immigrants who end up receiving welfare benefits liable for the cost of those benefits. The directive invokes rarely enforced 1996 legislation. That legislation holds sponsors legally liable for these costs. Immigration laws currently require that when an alien receives certain forms of means-tested public benefits, the government or non-government entity providing the public benefit must request reimbursement from the alien's financial sponsor, according to the memo. These laws also require, when an alien applies for certain means-tested public benefits, the financial resources of the alien's sponsor must be counted as part of the alien's financial resources in determining both eligibility for the benefits and the amount of benefits that may be rewarded. Financial sponsors who pledge to financially support the sponsored alien in the event that the alien applies for or receives public benefits will be expected to fulfill their commitment under the law. Since December 19, 1997, the Congress has required an alien's sponsor to sign an affidavit of support under Section 213A of the Immigration and Nationality Act, pledging financial support for the sponsored alien in the event the sponsored alien applies for or receives means-tested public benefits. Currently, agencies are not adequately enforcing these requirements. Ensuring compliance with the rule of law requires renewed efforts to enforce these requirements and the issuance of appropriate guidance so agency practices and enforcement can be aligned with federal law. Agencies are not adequately enforcing these requirements. And therein lies the issue we have with practically every federal law, unless somehow it financially benefits the federal government. Agencies aren't enforcing federal requirements. This is why we have gun crime in liberally run cities. This is why we have fraud in so many different areas. And this is why we have issues with immigration. Agencies aren't enforcing the requirements. But this new memo is, it's words on paper, but it tells us the president is aware and that he is doing what he can to require them to enforce these requirements. So if you sponsor someone coming into this country and they end up on the welfare rolls, guess what? You're going to be on the hook for these people because you attested to the fact that they'd be able to take care of themselves. And now they can't. It's on you. Uh-oh.
What we're about to say will turn your world upside down.
Well, maybe not quite. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. I'm looking through stories. I'm editing on the fly here because I had a lot of stuff stacked up, and we've managed to get through a lot of it, but there were a couple of stories I just had to toss. Because there's no way we're going to get to... I had four more stories stacked up, and there's no way in the next 10 minutes we're going to get all four of those stories. We're probably not going to get the two in that are remaining. We might get one of these two. And right now I'm flipping the coin. Which one? Okay, I'm picking one, and we're going to go with it. But the other ones you'll get in the newsletter today. So get signed up for the Daily Perspective newsletter, go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Fill out the form in the right-hand column. Answer yes to the email you will receive afterwards to confirm that you do want to receive the newsletter. And you'll get all of these stories, the stories that we've talked about today and the stories I just had to pull because there's no time. So do that today. Go to go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. See, when I'm on autopilot, I make mistakes. dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Get signed up today. You're familiar with Michael Avenatti. He's the guy who represented, that's an interesting way to put it. He represented Stormy Daniels, porn star Stormy Daniels, and made a name for himself, and CNN loved this man. He was on almost 250 times on CNN. Just an amazing thing. CNN was so happy to have somebody that would condemn Donald Trump, they booked him as often as they could. Well, he's going to have a busy day in Manhattan federal court this afternoon. This time he's there as a defendant, not as counsel. 49-year-old Avenatti is scheduled to be arraigned on charges that he stole nearly $300,000 from adult film actress Stormy Daniels, the client who rocketed him to national prominence. Approximately 3.5 hours later, Avenatti is scheduled to be arraigned on charges he tried to extort up to $25 million from athletic apparel giant Nike by threatening to expose claims that the shoemaker paid off high school basketball players to steer them to Nike-sponsored colleges. In the Nike case, Avenatti is charged with one count of extortion, one count of sending interstate communications with intent to extort, and two counts of conspiracy. In the Stormy Daniels case, he's charged with one count of wire fraud and one count of aggravated identity theft. If convicted on all counts, Avenatti could face a total of 69 years in prison. In other words, it's a life sentence. Avenatti repeatedly has denied any wrongdoing and is expected to plead not guilty to all charges. He initially was arrested on March 25th at a New York law firm where he'd scheduled a meeting with Nike executives. 6 days earlier, prosecutors said Avenatti and a co-conspirator identified by several news outlets as celebrity attorney Mark Garagos met with attorneys for Nike on March 19th and threatened to release damaging information if the company didn't agree to make multi-million dollar payments to them, as well as an additional $1.5 million payment to a California youth basketball coach Avenatti claimed to represent. According to the government, Avenatti threatened to hold a news conference on the eve of Nike's quarterly earnings call and the start of the NCAA tournament to announce allegations of misconduct by Nike employees, at one point telling Nike's lawyers he would, quote, take $10 billion off your client's market cap. I'm not effing around, end quote. Avenatti was indicted formally in the Nike matter this past Wednesday. That same day, prosecutors indicted him in the Daniels case, in which they claimed Avenatti stole two payments totaling $297,500 from an advance Daniels was supposed to receive from a book deal in the summer of 2018. Court documents said Avenatti gave Daniels' literary agent a doctored letter with her signature directing the agent to divert the money to an account controlled by Avenatti. The lawyer then allegedly spent the money on airfare, hotels, car services, restaurants, and meal delivery, online retailers, payroll for his law firm, and another business he owned, and insurance. The indictment said that after Daniels asked Avenatti why she hadn't received her first payment, Avenatti falsely claimed he was still trying to extract the money from the publisher. Weeks later, the lawyer allegedly used the funds recently received from another source to pay Daniels the amount she was owed, $148,750. Soon after, prosecutors said Avenatti received another payment of $148,750 from Daniels' agent and used that money on personal expenses, including a lease payment on a Ferrari. When Daniels asked for the remaining money, Avenatti allegedly misled her to believe that the book's publisher was refusing to pay the amount to Daniels' literary agent. Avenatti's legal issues have been daunting, but his troubles are not limited to New York. In March, federal prosecutors in Southern California accused Avenatti of committing bank fraud and wire fraud by embezzling settlement money from five clients, including a paraplegic man, to pay personal expenses and debts, as well as those his coffee business and law firm. According to U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna, Avenatti also obtained $4.1 million in loans from a Mississippi bank by using fraudulent tax returns, stating he made more than $14 million between 2011 and 2013 and had paid more than $1 million in estimated taxes to the IRS in 2012 and 2013. In fact, investigators say, Avenatti owed the IRS $850,438 plus interest and penalties for the years 2009 and 2010, paid no income taxes for 2011 and 2012 and 2013, and paid no estimated taxes in 2012 and 2013 at all. If convicted of all 36 counts in the California case, Avenatti faces up to 335 years in prison. 335 years. This guy is a professional, world-class liar, con artist, scam artist. He is possibly one of the lowest of the low on the face of the planet. And I just have one question. How is this man not the front-running Democrat presidential candidate? How is it that this man is completely out of the picture? Because he would be perfect! He's a liar. He's a con artist. He's cheated on his taxes. He's diverted funds for his own personal use. He's more qualified than Hillary Clinton. This guy is a shoo-in. But he's ticked the wrong people off. He has upset the wrong people. Bless his heart. He's gone too far. And certain people have decided, we got to put him away. And as a result, he's having his day in court today. Of course, he says he's not guilty. Of course, he says, no, I'm a victim. I'm a victim of politics. That's what he sees. One of the things he's saying, this is all politically motivated. He's pointed fingers at Donald Trump. And again, because of this distraction and diversion, I completely and totally believe he would be the perfect candidate for president for the Democrat Party. The only problem is he got caught. And he got caught red-handed. And the thing is, he got caught red-handed using the money of the person he thought he could use to topple Donald Trump. He defrauded this client, a very high-profile client, and got caught doing it. And then he had the stones to go after Nike. He actually tried to blackmail Nike. Oh my goodness. But the thing is, even if he weren't going after president, this guy could be a Democratic member of Congress. Maybe he should pursue a career as a minority activist. He could chum up with Al Sharpton. That's enough for today. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow on the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.